Is everybody in? Is everybody in? The show is about to begin.
Welcome to the podcast, Conscience That Made Us. Interviews and stories, tales from the bus. We love taking you back to when it all went down. The greatest live shows and that cheering crowd sound. It's Concerts, Concerts That Made Us, ConcertsThatMadeUs.com.
Hey, this is Steve from Devil on the Run, Montreal, Canada, and you're listening to Concerts That Made Us.
Put up. Steve, you're very welcome to Concerts That Made Us.
Thank you for having me, Brian. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's great to have you. Now, I'm genuinely looking forward to diving into your music. Now, first off, Devil on the Run, you guys really rock. I mean, your last release is a perfect example of it. Carry that home. Take us a bit deeper into the song.
Yeah, well, thank you very much first for the kind words. Yeah, we were really proud of it. It just, you know, it's one of those things like my partner in crime, Johan Boudreau, who's like the lead guitar player and also sort of producer, recording engineer and all of that. He sends me riffs and I'm also a guitar player as well. I play rhythm and I'll sift through stuff and see what kind of excites me. And I think for this one, it was actually the chorus that came together. And it's funny, like, you know, sort of going back to that famous McCartney story where, you know, what was it, like Let It Be or something was like scrambled eggs or something like this. One of his songs, like he had just like some ridiculous, because it was the melody that he had. And it was the same with me. Like I had the melody and I had completely sort of different lyrics. And it was sort of in the same inspiration, but it wasn't really elegant. And it was just sort of, it felt very sort of rough and thrown together. So I kind of shaped it a bit and I like the vibe of sort of the without preaching, it's like, you know, what you're gonna do in this world at the end when your time here is done, whatever you've done here, you're carrying that home, whether it's good, whether it's bad. So, you know, in the end, try and be good, you know, unless you don't really care. But for me, it's like, you know, I find the world is a tough place as it is, and beating each other up just makes it all that much harder, you know. So there's a lot of division in the world today. I'm not going to get political, but without getting all zen and hippie, it's just, you know, I'd rather be in a very positive situation than a negative one.
Yeah, wouldn't we all?
Yeah. So that's where the song kind of came from.
Yeah. How do you guys approach the recording process then? And the whole production.
So Johan has his own production company called Alchemic Audio or Alchemic Audio. And we've known each other a long time through video games and because I work also as an audio director in video games. So he worked with me and then I used him often for doing all like mixes and stuff like this. And like the guy's super talented. He comes in. I've hired him as our recording engineer when we're recording voices for the games and all that. So he has his own studio at home. It's, you know, fully functional. His whole basement was just designed to be a recording studio. So I'm lucky in that sense that it's a great partner to have. And basically, once we put the structure of the song together, then he'll start, he'll like program and put drums down to it. And since the last two tracks, like since post the Star-Lord stuff that we did for Guardians of the Galaxy, we then recruited drummer Martin Plante, who's another local guy, and he played on Believer and played on Carry That Home. So Johan does like a basic structure of the song, and then Martin comes in and he puts down his track and everything. And Johan played the bass on it. And I sang and did vocals. Johan does some backups. And now more recently, because we wanted to start playing live, and we did one show last year where I got a buddy of mine who was, you know, he's like, all he does is play music. So one week he's playing drums for like a Rolling Stones tribute. The next week he's playing bass with us. Then he's playing guitar in his band. I think you may even know him. He's from here, Steve Creep.
I do. I had Steve on in the past. He's a great guy.
I think he was the one who referred me saying, you know, you should reach out. So anyway, he played bass for us for our show. But more recently we added Stéphane Bedard, who's another local bass player who's, you know, been gigging on the scene, you know, as long as we have, and he's fit in like a glove. So we just did a big show March 1st at a club here in Montreal, Cafe Campus. And, it was amazing. Like, the place was packed and, We performed all the new stuff, as well as some of the Star-Lord stuff and some cover songs as well, to just kind of, you know, have fun. And it was a really good night. Great party atmosphere. The people were really into it. And yeah, I couldn't have been more happy. We all walked away with huge smiles.
Great, great. Now, for listeners that don't know, you guys have, you mentioned it, you have a pretty unique origin story. You were the audio director for the Marvel Guardians of the Galaxy game.
That's correct.
How did it all come about?
Well, I got to give credit to our creative director, Jean-François Dugas, who's a huge metalhead, huge Iron Maiden fan. So when we were, you know, putting together early on the design for the game, we knew that Marvel had said, like, we want you to make this your own. Like, don't try and copy the MCU. Find your spin on it. So they came to me and they were saying, well, we're going to start the game sort of in the 80s. And whereas the movies, Peter Quill's backstory kind of goes more to the 70s and his mom's experience there. For us, we were going to take that and move it ahead 10 years and sort of make the 80s our origin. And if you, when you start the game, actually, it starts in like 1980 something, and we never really give it a year. But when you get into, you start in Peter Quill's bedroom, and the room is just a shrine to the 80s. Like, it's just all the posters on the walls. There's like a ColecoVision, I think, on the ground, VHS tapes laying around, D&D dice, Rubik's cubes, like all kinds of stuff. And what's cool is you see it in first person with his feet up on the bed, and he's listening to the Star-Lord album on a cassette, a Walkman, and your controller actually can fast forward and be the Walkman, and you can listen to the whole album before you even play the game. So you're just sitting there on his bed, and there's a Rolling Stone magazine with an article about Star-Lord band, and we actually got a writer from Rolling Stone. So I'm skipping a bit ahead, but JF basically came to me and he said, hey, we had this idea for us in our universe. The reason he took the name Star-Lord and then put it on his back was because he loved this band from the 80s, a heavy metal band called Star-Lord. And I'm like, wow, that's cool. I like that. And I said, of course, you know, anybody who loved a band, at one point you wrote it on your jacket or designed or put a patch. So the fact that he had that Star-Lord on his back, I said, yeah, that really fits nice. And then he's like, okay, I'm not done. He's like, what would you think about if we go one step further and we actually write and record the record? And I'm like, well, that's really cool. I said, I think that'd be awesome. And he goes, okay, well, can you do it? And I said, well, I'm definitely going to try, because that's the opportunity of a lifetime. Like, you know, where was that opportunity when I was in my 20s, you know? So it's kind of funny that it took a long while to get here, but I couldn't have been more excited. And I knew it was a big task and a big undertaking to try and do the album while we were in development. So I knew I couldn't do it all myself. So I reached out to Johan and I said, you know, do you want to try and do this with me? And he was like, yeah, absolutely. So we demoed, the first song we did was Space Riders with No Name. And we wrote that, we recorded it. And then I brought JF into my audio room and I said, okay, I got something to show you and play for you. And I didn't tell him who it was or anything. And I just played it. And he was like, you know, really getting into it. He's like, is this for our game? And I'm like, maybe. And he's like, man, it's really good. And he's like, you know, so at the end, he's like, okay, I love it. And he's like, who is this? And I'm like, it's me and Johan. And he's like, are you serious? And I'm like, yeah. And my initial plan was, I figured, okay, like I've sang in plenty of bands and cover bands, and I've been a backup singer. I'm comfortable in either role. But I figured, I was like, I'll sing it because obviously I got to sell you the song idea and show you some kind of demo. But I was pretty much expecting him to say, like, okay, so are we going to get a real singer, or, you know, and I was going to go out and, you know, grab somebody I knew from the scene or whatever. But he loved my voice and he was like, who's singing? I'm like, it's me. And he's like, that's you. And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, this is awesome. He's like, we're keeping it. Don't change anything. And I was like, are you serious? You want to go with it? And he's like, we're going with it. So I, like I said, I couldn't have been happier. And then the real work started and we started writing and recording, and every few months or so, Johan would send me some riffs and I would sift through it. And I'd be like, okay, I think we could do something with this. And then I would just write lyrics that were, you know, to be fair, I sat with JF early on and we kind of made a list of sort of what's the theme of the record. Like, obviously, the fact that we're making a Marvel game and all that, I'm not going to be writing Wildside by Motley Crue with strippers and, you know, people getting killed and stuff. So I was like, let's get a box. That's the sandbox we're going to play in. And so, yeah, from that point on, once him and I had established the parameters of the sandbox, I started writing. And every time we would have an idea, we would record it and I would send it to him and he'd be like, man, I love it. And then he'd send it to Marvel for approval. And they're like, yeah, we love it. And believe it or not, like, we didn't get one idea refused. It was like 10 for 10.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Crazy.
It was pretty shocking.
Devil on the Run, then, is it like a continuation of that, or are you starting fresh? Or
it's fresh. I mean, Marvel owns the Star-Lord, obviously the moniker, and owns the rights to all that. So, you know, in no way are we going out, or do we want to go out and perform as Star-Lord band. Like, they own all of that. But we both thought, you know, when you look at Spotify and all that, like, I kept freaking out going, what's going on? Like, you look now and Zero to Hero has like over 6 million streams. I'd say like half the songs on the album are over 1 million streams. So I was like, well, people obviously seem to like it. So, you know, why don't we keep writing and putting stuff out and see what happens? So he was like, yeah. So we came up, I threw out the name Devil on the Run, and he was like, yeah, works for me. And then he sent me the first idea, which became Believer. And that was sort of our first post single. And we did a video for that. And then when we came with Carry That Home, like I said, it was a bit busy and we couldn't really get the time to get the video together, which we may or still not do. We're not sure. But I think right now we're looking at just getting more music out there as quick as we can and sort of keep building momentum and yeah, and just see where it goes. I mean, we're having fun. I mean, I love writing and recording music, and the fact that people are into it just, you know, blows my mind and makes me go, all right, well, let's keep having fun with this.
Yeah, yeah. Do you actually get the recognition then, you know, because it's music for a video game. Your face isn't on it, you know. Do you ever get recognized for it, or?
Not really, but it's funny, like, I've gone to like the Comic Cons that they have here or something, and I was wearing the Star-Lord band t-shirt, you know, the album cover, and this guy walked by me and he was wearing one, and I'm like, hey, you know, and he's like, hey, and then we started just chatting quick, and he's like, I guess you're a fan of the game, and I said, well, I guess I kind of have to be. I'm like, I'm the guy who, you know, co-wrote the Star-Lord album, and he's looking at me, he's like, are you serious? Like, and he didn't believe me. Yeah. Like, I thought it was full of shit, and I had to basically like open up my Twitter account and show him like, that's me, you know? And then he's like, oh my God, like, can I get a picture? And that's when it became funny, you know, where he's like, can I get a picture? And he was all excited. So I don't, like you said, get that kind of recognition, but at the same time, I'm still, like I said, super grateful and honored just to get that kind of opportunity. It's something, you know, any musician would have, to be able to you know, have your music backed and put out by Marvel with a game, you know, that's a nice way to get your stuff exposed to people. And that's why after that I was like, well, it seems kind of silly to let it all just sit there and go away and do nothing. And I'm like, we should really try and build on it and just see what can happen, where it can go, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And what's the vision for Devil on the Run then? Are you guys, do you approach it like a hobby, or are you serious that you want to make it to the big leagues?
Look, so here's the question I was sort of afraid of. Right. how to answer it in a nice, elegant way. But what I'll be completely straight. So whether how we regard this as a hobby or not, I mean, like I said, I'm a full-time musician as well as audio director. I still play in a few bands and usually gig once a month, maybe once every 2 months. So it's still a regular part of my life, which I'm super happy and grateful for. As for our vision, I mean, you know, obviously I'm not a spring chicken. You can tell by looking at me. So it's not like I expect the rock and roll world to be like, you know, hey, is there any, you know, 45, 50 and up guys that are looking to make it? You know, it's not exactly the target audience, but I'd still love to be able to take this as far as it can go. And if we could get you know, to the point where maybe we get to do some, you know, opening gigs for bigger bands when they come into Montreal. Obviously, if there was something on the table that was, you know, like a dream deal of like, hey, you know, these guys would love to take you across Canada as the opening act, I would seriously consider that. But I don't, in today's new world and new market, like, I don't have any false aspirations. I mean, I have the fantasy side where, you know, somebody like Dave Grohl's like, hey, I heard your album. Why don't you come do a song with me? And I'd be like,
yeah, yeah.
But again, that's more on the dream fantasy side, you know?
I getcha. Before we move on to some concert questions now, since you work in computer games, I have to ask, you don't work on the new Grand Theft Auto, do you?
Nah, I don't.
I was going to ask you for some secrets or whatever.
I wish I did. It's a great franchise.
Yeah, yeah. Right, concert questions. So, as a concert goer, what concerts do you think have made you?
Well, definitely I'd have to start with Kiss. That was probably the band that had the biggest influence on me. You know, I was a young, not very popular, you know, hard time fitting in, little dopey looking, you know, geeky looking. And all of a sudden I see these guys, and I loved comic books. I loved horror movies and horror books. And now here's this band that kind of puts it all together in one package of like, you know, visually, like, you know, as a kid, you're like, God, these guys look like superheroes, but they're rock stars. And, you know, and then even seeing them in a Marvel comic of their own, you know, so I got into them probably in the late 70s and without dating myself too much. And my dad actually took me to my first show at 12 to see Kiss.
Oh,
so for me, it was almost like at that point, I knew what I wanted to do. I didn't want nothing else. I was like, you know, my dad, he's old school. He's, you know, thankfully still around, and he still says it was one of the worst experiences of his life. He was like loud and, you know, cigarettes and drugs and people throwing up and beers. And I'm like, I'm home, you know, this is where I belong, you know? So it was quite amusing, but I've stayed a huge fan of the band. I mean, on this endless reunion sort of say goodbye, farewell tour, I think I've seen them three times, and that's three times they've come through here. And what's cool is my two girls, the first show they ever got to see was Kiss. I brought them to see Kiss. So it was like nice. Full circle. And they love the band too. Like, and they're big into concerts. And so, I mean, my music, I love music, period. Like I can listen to a score from a movie and just be, you know, just totally enthralled into it. And live, I mean, you know, every band, it's almost like going to different restaurants to me. It's like certain bands, you know, you go in going, okay, well, these guys are, you know, amazing musicians. Like I've seen, like, I love Rush. I've seen them a bunch of times. And again, you don't go see them for, you know, pyrotechnics and that kind of show. You go for the musicianship. So it's a different vibe, you know, whereas Kiss is more of a spectacle of, you know, music with explosions and everything. And it's a visual sort of much more of a visual experience. Same with, like, I've seen Alice Cooper a bunch of times, and he's another guy that I've, you know, loved, fell into that same Kiss sort of thing of, you know, well, who else does this kind of thing? Oh, there's this guy who like hangs himself and cuts his head off and, you know, has a snake around his neck. And I'm just like, oh my God, this is so cool. You know? So seen him a bunch of times. I mean, I've seen probably everybody in the hard rock genre over the years, you know, and some bands, you know, you walk away and you still have memories of how good they were live. You know, I can still remember some great shows, like, you know, whether it was Maiden or Priest. I mean, I've seen all these bands at least 6-7 times. So avid concert goer, you know, Van Halen, probably saw them every, I mean, it was one of those, every time they'd come through, I would just go and see them.
Yeah. I getcha. I'm actually seeing Priest tomorrow for the first time ever.
Oh my God. You're going to love it.
I can't wait.
Such a good band, such a great show. And I mean, Halford, I mean, he's the metal god. I mean, there's no taking anything away. The guy's just a master of what he does, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And the new album sounds phenomenal too. Like I've been listening to it the last week. I was really impressed. I mean, for, you know, what I love is that kind of, it kind of validates what we're trying to do, where I'm like, okay, well, look, these guys are in their 70s and they're still putting out relevant music, you know? And that's where I'd like to slot in. I mean, obviously it's like whether, you know, if age isn't an issue and you care about the music and the vibe, which is the way it kind of should be, I'm like, well, there you go. You know, these guys are 70 and they're still putting out music that people care about. So good on them, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's funny. I was going to ask you how you felt about guys like Kiss and everything, that when you see them like back in the 70s, they're young, they're vibrant, they're great. Then you've seen them now and they are in their 70s. How do you think they hold up?
They hold up very well. I'm very impressed. I mean, I can see where, you know, it's a bit different. But man, I mean, you got to give credit to these guys. They work hard. They've always been to me one of the hardest working bands out there who take their shit really seriously. Paul Stanley keeps himself in great shape. I mean, I was talking to my my trainer the other day and I sent him a picture of Paul Stanley flexing at 70 and he was like, holy shit. He's like, guy's got guns, you know? And I was like, you know, this is why I want to stay in shape, you know? And
yeah,
and to see them get up there in these boots and costumes and the makeup, and you know, and he still moves around quite a bit. I mean, Gene is the one who's obviously a little bit more tame, but to be fair, he's wearing like, what, about 60 pounds of yeah. costume and gear. So, but he still does the whole shtick of, you know, blowing fire and, you know, spitting blood. And, you know, he knows he's a true performer. He's sort of like Halford, where he doesn't have to do much to get the crowd to respond. Like he can just look at the audience a certain way, or he'll stand there as everybody's applauding and just do this.
Yeah,
and look at it, and the crowd just raises it another three levels, you know. And that's, you know, they're icons. They're at that level where they can do that. So I was impressed. I mean, I know what a lot of the older bands today, people are getting tagged with, you know, are they lip syncing and that. I don't think they are. I think what they're doing, and again, whether it's right or wrong, I'll let somebody else decide. I mean, it's not for me to judge. And I pay money to go see the show and I'm happy. And I know people are like, oh, it's not live, it's bullshit. It's like, look, man, at that age, like some nights, some songs, you may not be able to deliver it. And I'm pretty sure what they've done is they've recorded the stuff, obviously, in the studio when they were in good shape and rested off tour. And they have that as a backup. And if that night he can't pull off that song, well, then, you know, the guy's mixing him down and the backup up. But I can tell you, like, it's not, there's no way that whole show is faked. Like, I mean, I've been there and, you know, there's certain songs, obviously the ones that are maybe a bit higher in the register that, you know, he has a problem with. So, I mean, and if you're going there, you're going there to be entertained. I mean, let's be honest, you're not going to see Kiss for like the most amazing musicianship. That was never, and to be fair, that was never their sort of sales tag. You know, it wasn't like, hey, it's like, no, we keep it simple. Like to me, they're kind of like an AC/DC, like they keep it simple. Yeah. There's nothing revolutionary in AC/DC, but they're great songs with great grooves and, you know, huge choruses that people resonate with. So not everything has to be like technically impressive, you know, which is something I've tried to argue with people over the years. Like when we get into like the value, like, oh, Kiss, they suck. And it's like, okay, they suck, but they've been around 50 years. Like you got to at least acknowledge, and they've been putting out albums. I mean, up until the last little while, but they were still putting out albums in the 2000s. So, you know, I mean, and if you look at their past, like in the 70s, a lot of bands I don't think could have kept up with what they did, where they would put a record out, tour, back in the studio, like a record came out every year.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's impressive, but it's what burnt them out and basically got the other two guys to leave at one point. You can only do that for so long, right?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And, you know, the local scene then, for a band like yourselves trying to break in, what's the local scene like in Canada?
Here in Montreal, it's okay. It's not, obviously it's not bad, but it's not as great as it was back in the day. I mean, I think that's just live music in general, but you know, there's more and more acts that come through and play the smaller clubs, which is really nice. Like I saw Wolfgang Van Halen at a small club, back in November. You get some good acts. And I mean, for us, the club we played, we actually rented the club out. It's almost like a pay to play where you rent it out,
yeah,
and then you charge what you want. And, you know, but, you know, great stage. I mean, you know, I'll send you some photos and even some video if you want, but the stage was amazing. You know, big moving lights. Like, I mean, we look like rock stars up there just because the venue is such a great venue. So, you know, it's not like there's tons of those places. And obviously, you know, we all have day jobs, so it's not like we're looking to go out and play all these rural areas and all that. So we like to sort of go, okay, well, when we're going to play, we really want to make it work and make it an event. And it kind of works because, you know, if you're playing all the time, well, then, you know, people will just kind of, yeah, I've seen them and I'll see them next time or whatever. But when it's a little more sparse, you make it and build it up as more of an event. It's like, okay, we don't want to miss it because, you know, like they might not be playing for another 3-4 months or something. So that, it went really well. Like I said, the last one, and I'm sure we're going to be looking at doing another one in the next 6 months, but we wanted right now just write some more songs and get some more songs out there.
I like it. Now, if you think of all the gigs you've played over your entire career, is there one that sticks out as the highlight?
I'll be honest, right now, the one we did on March 1st, really, it really was like sort of a heartwarming thing, like without getting too deep into it. I mean, obviously, I'm sure you're aware of, you know, the video game industry is going through a lot of rough times right now and changes.
Mm.
So my team that I delivered Guardians with, we had been working on another development project for the last 2 years. And they canned the project at the end of January. And what was worse was they basically laid off 95% of that team. And that's the team I've spent the last 15 years with. That's the team I did Guardians with.
Oh, no.
And when Guardians hit, it was around the time of COVID. Like, we had to all work from home. And so originally, there was a lot of big, great marketing ideas to like go out and like put the band out on the road, almost like to doing like Gamescom and stuff like this. And COVID killed all of that. So that was heartbreaking for me, but at the same time, not as bad as what happened in January where, you know, everybody got let go. And the rough thing was, is like with some people who work from home, like myself, like I go in occasionally to the office and I wasn't there that time. So I didn't even get to see people that I'd been with. You know, I reached out to everybody on Facebook and that. So what was cool was the show on March 1st brought a lot of those work people because they never got to see, you know, the Star-Lord thing performed live. And that was something we always wanted to kind of celebrate, you know. So we performed the whole album at that show. And we did, like I said, the Devil on the Run stuff and some cover songs, some Maiden, some Priest, stuff like that, Metallica, Motorhead. And it was just such, the vibe was, it was special. It was almost like, you know, people came together and it was like a healing, if I could, you know, put it in that sense, where everybody, you know, hadn't seen each other since that shit day. And now it's like, the vibe isn't such a shit vibe. It's a celebratory, like we're all still here. And everybody had it'd been a month, so people had time to sort of process it and kind of move on now. So there was a lot of smiles and hugging. And, you know, like I said, it was a really magical sort of vibe in the air. And not to mention, I had a lot of my friends and guys I play in other bands with. Like, you know, sometimes you're looking out and you're like, oh, my God, this guy's here. Like, oh, my God, she came out. There was a lot of that during the night.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I got home, it was a good 2-3 a.m. before I was able to kind of unwind and get that adrenaline out.
I could imagine that gig is going to be very hard to beat. Like, you know, because it set the bar so high, the next one might not be like that.
Well, we had done one in October where we played a smaller club and it was a bit more intimate, and we did the same thing. We did most of the album plus the Devil on the Run stuff and a few covers. And again, like, I was just so surprised at the crowd reaction, you know. Like, I mean, we bring a lot of energy on stage and we're all very experienced playing live. So it's not like any of us are like, you know, standing, staring at our feet. And, you know, like, we definitely are really in it and interact with the crowd. And all three of us up front have a lot of experience. So there's no stage fright or, you know, we all know how to work an audience and we all know the type of show people want to see. So we give that. And just that first gig, like the energy, like, I mean, it was a small club and I think we broke into Ace of Spades and like a mosh pit broke out in front of us where, you know, about 12 people were just slamming and the mic's getting hit and hitting me in the mouth while I'm playing. And I'm like, all right, let's just do this. This is cool. You know? So even that, I was like, okay, it kind of surpassed what I was expecting. I mean, you know, people are going to, you hope they're going to enjoy it. Obviously they're coming out because they like the music, but you never know, like, you know, is it going to be like, you know, polite collapse, or are people just going to lose their shit, you know? And for this show, for that one, the energy level, like, I was like, wow, like, I wasn't expecting that. And then, so already I was like, well, can we do it again and see how it goes? And this March 1st gig, like I said, there was a little bit of a variable of this sort of healing thing that played a part in it. But the energy during the show was just insane. Like, people were just going like crazy. And we were like, wow, this is great. And you feed off of that, you know? So, you know, you're like, okay, we're going to play even harder and move more and, you know, and do more. And it's just like this back and forth, give and take. And when that happens, I mean, there's nothing cooler than that feeling.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Almost like a drug. And yeah. I usually ask then, if you flip that question around now, any gig you've played ever, the worst one, everything went wrong, how did you overcome it?
Oh, man. God, so many. I mean, I've been gigging since I started at 14. So it's been a lot of years of playing live. I don't know. I mean, you know, at the time when everything seems so serious and like, we're trying to make it, you know, and you have a bad gig and everybody kind of turns on everybody. And now you look back and you're like, ah, it's all kind of silly, isn't it? You know, it's a bit funny. I mean, I can remember a bad gig. I was actually not playing. I was doing live set. Well, I can remember a couple of funny things. One, I remember we were playing, and this is back when, like, in the hair metal days, and back here, there was a really strong scene of music. A lot of clubs, a lot of great bands. Like, I'm not going to compare it to LA, but you could tell, like, Montreal almost had its own, like, LA vibe sort of scene. Like, it was really, there was a lot of clubs you could play. It just seemed like every week there was a new band with like hair out to here and posters and names. So it was very competitive. And we were supposed to play this club on our own, and it was a local club. So like, we knew we were going to have a lot of our friends in that. And then, you know, shiesty club owners, and the guy, the sound man, calls me and he's like, so you and the other band will be playing it. And I'm like, the other band? And he's like, well, yeah, it's Easter weekend. We have you and we have this other band. And I'm like, well, no, I was told it was just us. And I'm like, what the fuck is this? You know? And yeah. Like, well, no, that's what it is. And I'm like, okay, well, how's the money working? And he's like, well, we're going to do this and that. And I, you know, it's one of those situations, like, you either go along or they find somebody else. So you're like, all right, I vented and I got pissed off, but in the end it didn't change anything. So I said, all right, let's just go in and do the weekend. Problem being is the other band was really good, and we had, you know, we were still a bit green in some areas, you know. Nice. So I remember we were doing, at the time, because it was very popular, we were doing Poison, Nothing But a Good Time. And I come out and I start the lick, and it's just me, right? And I'm playing it. And then as I hit the G chord, it just sounds like complete utter ass. And I'm like, what the hell? And I hit the D and it sounds... And I look, and it's because I left my pick in the strings.
Oh my God.
And I didn't realize it. So I started playing it. And of course, as long as I'm barring everything, you don't hear that the pick's in there. But as soon as I hit that open G, and I'm just trying not to look like, you know, you don't want to show it and have what we call the scared face, you know, where you're like, oh my God, you know. So you try and fake it. But once you hit that second bum note, there's no faking it. It's not like I can go, like, it's not me. It's like, no, you're the only one playing. So that was pretty bad. And just, I remember that wasn't a very high morale weekend for the band at the time, because we were getting our ass kicked by the other band like pretty much every night. And I can remember doing sound for, actually, I actually play in a cover band with the guitar player who was playing that night. And it was for a big biker party, sort of like Hell's Angels.
Oh.
And I was mixing, and one big Hell's Angel guy decides to come up to me and he's like, turn it up. And I'm like, okay. And I kind of just fake a bit turning it up, because I'm like, you know, at some point the system's not going to take it. And he's like, no, I fucking told you to turn it up all the way up. And I'm like, oh, fuck. Bring the faders up. And sure enough, within 5 minutes, the fronts fucking blow.
Oh, lovely.
And I'm just like, oh, no. And now I'm just like, bikers, and they're gonna get angry. But luckily, I think everybody was drunk enough that they just took the monitors and turned them like speakers.
Yeah.
And finished the night. Like, it was halfway towards like the end of the show, So we finished the last few songs, but I was just like, I'm just getting out of here and I'm never working this gig again. I was like, I'm not coming here to get threatened, you know, and possibly get shot. So I was like, yeah. I'm done.
You know? Man, I wouldn't blame you.
Oh, yeah, had a really fun one. One of the best that I'll always remember. That same cover band that where we were getting our butt kicked, we got this amazing, like when you have an agent, you know, you never know what you're going to get. Eh? The guy's like, ah, we got a great room for you. And you get there and it's like, you know, things are dripping on your head while you're playing. Yeah. And you're like, oh, my God, you know, and there's asbestos on the walls. And you're like, okay, great. But this one, it was on the road. So it was about a 6-7 hour drive from here for a weekend. But we got paid, like, at the time, it was a lot of money. It was like $1,000 for 2 nights. But we were only playing for half an hour each night. We were, like, the opening act. And, again, it was for a biker festival. And these guys treated us like gold. I mean, it was like VIP treatment, you know? Like, we'd be in our sort of hotel lounge area, and there'd be a guy at the door standing, like, security. And then he'd walk in at some point, and he's like, you boys need anything? And we're like, oh, you know, some beer would be cool. Guy'd leave, and he'd come back, put a 2-4 in the room, and then walk back at the door. And all weekend, like, we'd play for our half an hour, and then it was like they were just wheeling kegs backstage for the bands, and we were just, yeah, let's go. So, you know, it was like we got paid to basically play half an hour and then just party for the whole weekend. So that was like, those gigs were very rare, but you remember them when you got them because it was a weekend of just insane fun.
Yeah, you know? I was just going to say, if more gigs were like that, it'd be perfect.
Oh, man. Like I said, it was one of those, you know, everything, like the, you know, the partying, the people we met, like the laughing, it was nonstop, you know, it's just pure out fun. So those, like you said, they're kind of rare, unfortunately. It's usually the other ones that I was referring to where, you know, some kind of radioactive fluid dripping from the ceiling onto your heads and scalding you, you know? So,
yeah, unfortunately. But
it was good. Yeah. Do you play? Because you sound like you've done some of these gigs.
Years ago. I haven't done it in years. Now I just kind of sit in the room and mess around on guitar, drums myself.
That's all right.
Yeah. I keep saying at some stage I must get back to it, but I'd imagine I'll be like in my 50s or 60s by the time I get time to do it.
Hey, why not? You know, I mean, well, you got kids, just start training them and there's your jam band, you know?
I've thought of it already.
I got my two daughters are both like my eldest now. She's 17 and she plays in a band and gets to perform once in a while, like at obviously not bars, but like we have a big festival here in the summer, Rib Fest, where it's like for 3 days, like there's all these companies from the States that come and just cook ribs outdoors. And they have a huge stage out and it's all local bands and everything for like 2-3 days. So they got to play on the bill last year. So it was really cool. Like I was like, hey, you're on the same bill as your dad.
How did she feel about that?
Oh, she thought it was great. I mean, she loved it. And I mean, they do like hard rock stuff. And so I was just like, man, this is so cool. Like seeing my kid up on stage. And so now I'm working on getting the younger one. She's 13 and I'm like, all right, we got to get you on drums, you know, we got a drum kit here. So I'm actually looking at my my cover band drummer who's going to start coming over and giving her some lessons because I can tell she's good. She's got the groove for it, but just needs the teaching now, you know. And then eventually, you know, I can gig with them and, you know, play with them until they kick me out and say I'm too old. You know?
That'd be pretty cool. Yeah. You'll have to come back on when you have the family band.
Yeah, absolutely.
And before we dive into the last couple of questions, then future plans that are set in stone, new music, when will it be out, gigs, anything you can share?
New music, we're going into writing mode now. Like I said, we were doing a lot of prep the first 2 months getting ready for this gig. We literally didn't have the bass player up until December. So, you know, Steve's got his own great project going on. So, you know, he was like, look, if you're really stuck, like I'll do it. And I was like, look, man, like you're doing great pushing your own thing. And I don't want to take you off of that. Like stick with that. We'll find somebody, you know, and the drummer plays in a Megadeth tribute band here locally.
Right.
So he's like, well, the bass player, you know, and we were like, hey, if he's a nice guy and, you know, obviously if he's playing Megadeth, he's good. So we were like, as long as he's a cool dude, like let's meet him and let's see if he's interested. And he heard Believer and what we were doing and then listened to the Starlight. And he's like, man, yeah, I could get into this. So, you know, it's funny, like in the younger days, finding players, even though the scene seemed so much bigger, was really tough. Like if you're looking for a bass player, it was like, well, it's like looking for a unicorn, you know, like it just seemed so hard to find the right guy. And here we interview, like, meet one guy and we're like, all right, well, you're in, you know? And he's like, all right, great. You know, and I came home and I said to my wife, I was like, that was like so easy. I said, just, you know, great vibe. And it clicked. So right now I think we want to focus on trying to get a bit more songs out, a bit more material. So, build off of what we did with Carry That Home and try and get a few more tracks out there in the next few months so that I think when we go out and gig again, probably, I'm thinking probably early summer, we'll have more material and probably a video or something like that that we'll do for one of these songs. So that's probably the plan for the moment. Like I said, we all sort of have our side gigs that, you know, we use to pay bills and all that. So obviously that limits the time. Whereas if I was in my 20s and just doing this full time, you know, it would probably move a bit quicker. But again, you know, we're doing it for the fun and for the love of music. And you know, like I said, if it can ever go to any kind of higher level, I think we're all going to be happy. And if it's just putting out music that, you know, the people who've followed us up until now continue to like, then that's fine too, you know?
Yeah, yeah, true.
It's kind of a nice position to be in where, you know, it's not this like, oh my God, like if I don't make it, I'm screwed, you know, which was... I lived that for about 20 years,
yeah. You know?
And it's nice to sort of not have that. I find it can actually be more productive where, you know, when you do sit down, you don't feel like there's like five guns at your face. You know, you're like, no, I'm sitting down to enjoy the process and to write and to, you know, not be like, oh my God, I didn't write anything today. You know, I'm screwed. You know,
yeah.
So it's a different approach and I enjoy it. And I think we actually work better with that type of vibe. And as I said, though, like even the pressure when we were writing the Star-Lord stuff, I mean, it's funny, the song that took off the most, Zero to Hero, was the last one that was written for the album. And it was kind of like, you know, my creative director's like, you know, Steve, it's getting a little late. When are you going to be bringing this? Because, you know, they got to do the jacket and the cassette with all the lyrics. So there's other departments down the assembly chain that need to have the time to do their shit. So I was like, okay. And I remember it was during the Christmas break and I'd be going out every night walking my dog and I'd have the song playing just, you know, the sort of scratch track. And I kept trying to come up with the melody and I had the chorus and I knew it was a good chorus. I didn't have the lyrics, but I knew I had that, you know, are you ready to go, go, go? And I'm like, that's a great hook and I want to use that and build around it. And it wasn't until, like I said, like the gun really came up into my face and it was sort of like, you know, we need the song. I was like, okay. And then the floodgates open and I just got that first line of, cause I was like, okay, we've covered almost everything up in the album. I'm like, what am I going to write about? And I was like, from the time I was young, I knew this day would come. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. And then I'm like, okay, you can kind of sing about him, but it's not him. Like everything that was written on that album can relate to the game. And yet it wasn't really written specifically with that in mind.
Yeah.
It was almost like it was right behind my front consciousness and it was sort of guiding and helping. But at the same time, at that point, I just wanted to bang the song out and be like, okay, and let's get something good. And that's what I said to Johan. I said, okay, we really got to go all out on this one. And that's why we were like, okay, yeah, fast tempo in your face. And I was like, okay, well, lyrically, what am I going to deliver? And then when I wrote it out, you know, when I gave it to them, they were like, oh my God, this is great. Like you wrote kind of like the story of the character in the game. And I'm like, oh yeah, I did. You know, in my head, I was just sort of like, okay, this is cool. And it all works and it, you know, it all flows well and it tells a good story. And then I realized, I was like, oh, look what you did. And I was like, okay, great. We'll take it. You know?
Oh, I like it. I like it.
It'd be nice to take credit and be like, yes, I'm brilliant that way. You know, in reality, it's like, you know, you fall out of something and land in something cool and you're like, oh, this works, you know?
Yeah, I get you. But you know what? I, for one, can't wait to see what you put out next now with Devil on the Run. I'll be really looking forward to it.
Oh, I really appreciate that, man. Like I said, it's it's great to meet people like yourselves who support, you know, unsigned acts and do this type of thing. And we're just happy to, like I said, to have a medium to put stuff out. That's the one nice thing. Again, like, everything comes with pros and cons. And, you know, back in the 80s, we couldn't be doing this. Like, you know, if you didn't have a record label pushing you, like, or a radio station, like, it was just, you just sat there with, you know, I remember going to jam with, for bands, and they're like, oh yeah, we got a CD, and you'd look and the walls would be full of boxes of their CDs that are just sitting there. And I'm like, so you had money to print the CD, like, not selling, you're not selling it. It's, you know, it's one thing to have a CD. It's another thing to be able to say, well, we're selling it and it's moving.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
They were using them as, like, you know, beer things everywhere. So I'm like, yeah, you know, I can use it as a bookend somewhere, you know? So today, what's cool is, you know, bands like, whether it's myself or somebody like my kids starting out or whatever, you know, the technology, like, you don't need to sell your soul to go into a recording studio. The flip side of that is now you have to wade through a lot more, we'll say crap to find the good stuff, because everybody's able to come in now. Whereas before, there was more of a screening process, and that didn't mean that everything that got signed was great. Cause, you know, I could sit here and go on for 20 minutes telling you about how the record people ruined every industry they created, you know, like, whether it was the hair metal genre, and, you know, quickly it's like, okay, Bon Jovi broke big and sold Slippery When Wet, Def Leppard broke. We're going to sign everybody that looks and sounds like Bon Jovi and Def Leppard, except this time the singer's a brunette. You don't like the brunette? We got a redhead guy. We got this band is this band. And it's like, yeah, but what about the songs? You know, we'll worry about that later, you know? And then everything becomes diluted to the point of, like, everybody's got a power ballad and everything seems very formula, and it loses what was cool. And how did it get lost? Because they just diluted it chasing money. And the same thing happened with grunge. Then Nirvana broke, and it's like all the hair metal guys couldn't get somebody to spit on them if their head was on fire. And then they did the exact same thing. Okay, we're going to sign everybody that wears flannel and, you know, looks at their feet while they play and, yeah. You know, or wears the combat boots and this. And listen, I mean, I love, you know, Soundgarden, Alice in Chains and bands like this. I mean, they were phenomenal. But the other side is there was a lot of garbage that came out too, where you were just like, who the hell are these? Like, everybody's singing with their sort of voice. And yeah. You're like, okay, that's the new formula. And now I compare the industry very much now to, I find, the 50s and 60s, where it was very single oriented. Nobody gave a shit about albums. It's just like, where's your single? Where's your single? You know, back then, you know, dating myself, we had this cool vinyl thing called the 45, and it was just a small little record and had one song on one side and one on the other. And that's what radio stations would get. And I feel it's gone back to that now, where, you know, record labels don't really care about investing and spending time supporting a band. You know, that was one thing back then too. If you were lucky, they'd be like, all right, we got a 5-year plan. And, you know, by the third album, we want to be profitable. And you're like, okay, well, that seems feasible. Whereas now you get one shot, and if it doesn't do anything, it's like, you're all gone. Right, back to McDonald's with you, you know?
Yeah. It's crazy. So, You wonder what the future holds, kind of. Will it come full circle again, back to albums, back to bands being
profitable?
I'd like
to think that it does, because I feel everything in life is on a wheel and it's always turning, and it's, you know, and what's old becomes new again at some point. I think it's going to need, you know, some band to basically go big the way, you know, Bon Jovi did or the way Nirvana did. It's going to take that sort of thing. Because that's what happens. And then everybody looks and goes, oh man, like, that's making a lot of money. How do we get a piece of that? That's the sad thing, is it's driven by greed and all that. And it's, you know, when you start mixing creativity and artists and all that with the money and the business side, like, the two don't really,
no,
you know? So I feel like the artist had a better chance in the back in the 70s and all that, of, like, you know, you had more of the support. Whereas now you don't have that, but you do have the ability to put out something that sounds highly produced on your own. And now and today, like, I mean, you know, I met you through the magic of the internet, and, you know, you can put your music out on the internet and you can build a website and you can do a lot of this stuff on your own, where, you know, you can promote yourselves to a pretty good level at some point, you know, where you don't really need that whole machine to be part of it yet. At some point, if you want to get to a certain level, you do need the machine. but it's easier to kind of get the visibility from the machine if, you know, now you have tools that weren't available to us 20 years ago.
Yeah, true, yeah.
I'd love to see the album thing come back because, I mean, to me, the experience of putting on a record and just sitting on your bed and reading all the liner notes and listening to it and, you know, the pacing of the record. I mean, it's, you know, there was an experience there, you know, and kids don't get that experience. I mean, I know I sound like grandpa here, but it was a cool experience. Like, there was nothing more exciting to me than coming home with that album I just bought that I've been waiting for at the record, like, you know. Like, I don't know, Number of the Beast or Peace of Mind or something like this. Like, I can remember coming home with Power Slave and just putting it on and just sitting on my bed going like, this is unbelievable. And like reading everything. And, you know, I was just even, I went to see Dune Part 2 this week and I was explaining to my daughter. I was like, well, I read the book. And I said, and you want to know how I read it? And she's like, how? And I said, because on Peace of Mind, Iron Maiden wrote a song to tame a land. And I said, it was originally supposed to be called Dune, but the writer Frank Herbert or whatever his name is, the guy who wrote Dune, he wouldn't give them the rights to call it Dune. So they called it To Tame the Land, but the whole song is about, you know, the Fremen and you know, yeah, the stories and everything that happens in Dune is in the song. So I was like, it sounds so cool. Like, I'm going to go to the library and get this book. And I did, and I fell in love with it. So, you know, there's a lot of cool things that, you know, heavy metal would, you know, educate, and, you know, you'd go and read about the occult and Mr. Crowley. Well, who is Mr. Aleister Crowley? Okay, witchcraft guy, black magic. All right, let's read about that, you know. And there's a lot of cool educational stuff that I found came out of listening to metal.
Yeah, yeah, there actually is. It's not all Satan and the Beast and stuff like that, you know.
No, there's a lot of interesting stuff, and, you know, the hard rock community doesn't get enough credit for being well-read and educated people, you know.
Yeah, true. Right, the last couple, these are a couple of random odd questions, but I'm intrigued to see your answers. First off, what are you currently obsessed with? It can be anything at all.
Right now, probably going to the gym. I've been training a lot in the last 2 weeks, so it's kind of become a bit of an obsession where I just go every day and I don't think, because the minute you start thinking, you'll find reasons not to go. And it's almost like this thing where I have almost like a bet with myself, like, how many days in a row can I just keep going before I, you know, fall off that wagon. But it's been going good so far. Playing music, obviously. I got shows coming up with a couple of different bands, so I got a bunch of songs I got to start learning and going over. And musically, I'm trying to think what I'm listening to. I mean, I listen to everything. I love, you know, some of the, I mean, I don't know if you want to call them a new band, but like, I love Ghost. I think phenomenal band, you know, again, it fits into my wheelhouse of visually very cool. You know, we went as a family, my wife and my two daughters, to go see Ghost when they came for last year in September. My girls like are all gothed out and enjoying, you know, the experience, and they knew all the songs, they know all the material. And, I just think, you know, Tobias Forge, I think he great writer. Sonically, the albums sound phenomenal. And I even say, you know, to me, there's elements of Queen, there's elements of like, you know, hard rock. And it's just, it's very unique. And again, like a lot of bands that dare to go with these visual things, you get a lot of flack where people just, you know, shit on it because it's different, you know. And, but if you listen to the music, I mean, I love the tracks. I think they're a phenomenal band. And, I'm looking forward. I'm going to be going to see, I'm actually going to see Jason Bonham next month with the Zeppelin Experience.
Oh, man.
So he comes through here with this phenomenal band, and they, it's really, I saw it probably about 10 years ago, but it was so warm and interactive. Like, it's like, he's got home movies of him playing with his dad and they're jamming out to like a Zeppelin tune. And he walked out the beginning of the show. He just walked out on the middle of the stage and started talking to the crowd saying, you know, it's a bit of a celebration of my dad and, you know, and this and that and the band. And, you know, like I said, home movies playing while the band's going. And it was really cool.
Oh, man.
So I'm going to see that, and I'm going to see actually Heart with Cheap Trick in the summer because,
oh, nice. Again,
phenomenal band, and my daughter's a huge fan, so she was like super excited. So yeah, those are the shows I'm looking forward to right now. So I guess I'm excited about, you know, up here in Canada, we get cold weather and winters can be dark and long. This winter, actually, the gods smiled upon us. We didn't get much snow, not that cold, really rare. I mean, I guess, I don't know if you chalk it up to global warming, but they pretty much say it was the El Nino that that caused it. But we had a great winter. But at by this point, like, we're just chomping at the bit for the warm weather and the summers, you know?
Yeah.
We live here in the city of extremes. Like, the summers are unbelievable. It's like sunny, it's hot, humid. We have music festivals everywhere downtown and in the city, and it really comes alive. And then in the winter, it's like, you know, darkness and snow and cold, you know?
Right. It's not too bad though. You could almost put up with that if you know you're going to get a good summer.
Well, that's sort of the trade-off, right? It's like I said, it's a bit of a world of two extremes. You know, you go from the crazy winters to like, okay, man, when summer gets here, and then summer gets here and everybody's outdoors and everybody's on their balconies and, you know, having barbecues and having a pint. And it's just, you know, the city comes to life and then kind of goes to sleep, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I gotcha. I gotcha. And the final question. So what album is your go-to album?
Ooh. God, there's so many. I got a few. It depends on my mood. I mean, I think on my phone, I have at least 30 albums that I'm always sort of, some stay and some I move in. Rush, Exit Stage Left, definitely one of them. I would say Kiss, probably Kiss Alive 1 is like, that's the album that when I heard it, like just... It's funny because I know the story of, you know, how they cheated on that album to basically make you feel the impact of what a Kiss concert was like back in 75. And when I heard it, it had that exact effect on me. Like, I couldn't believe what I was hearing, and the crowd so loud and these explosions that are actually 1812 cannons that they dubbed in afterwards. What's his name? Eddie Kramer did. So that's definitely in there. I would even say Frampton Comes Alive. Another fantastic album. I've seen Peter Frampton a couple of times. Phenomenal guitar player. Great songwriter. Depends on my moods. I mean, you know, Steely Dan's another band. I freaking, anytime they come on, it's like a nice massage for the brain and ears. Like, they're just so smooth, you know? And the heavier stuff, I mean, I love, you know, Rage Against the Machine, stuff like that. Soundgarden. Obviously, you know, Metallica, Megadeth. It's really a mood thing, but I would definitely put Kiss and Rush, and probably maybe even Maiden up in the in that bag. You know, like something from any of those takes me back to being a kid and, you know, being in my bedroom and going through all the stuff and freaking out and just being so enthralled with what I was listening to. So
I like it. I like it. Yeah. Listen, Steve, it's been an absolute blast now. I've really enjoyed it. Thanks a million.
Yeah, man, me too. I mean, we could, if we were sitting here now, I'd be like, all right, let's continue and go to the bar, to pub and get a pint, you know?
Yeah,
continue.
I was thinking the same myself.
Yeah, it would be amazing. But anyway, hopefully one day we'll either get out there and meet in person, or you'll be down here. If you ever are, you know, definitely drop me a line. Happy to take you out for a pint. And when the new stuff comes out for Devil on the Run, I'll definitely email you now that we have each other's contacts and give you a preview of what we're doing before it goes out.
We'll be right back.
Hey guys, I really hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, please rate and review us on iTunes and Spotify. And if you're interested in signing up the Band Builder Academy, use the link in the show notes below and enter the code CONCERTS and you'll receive 10% off. So, until next time, keep rocking.
Hey, what are you guys still doing here? The show's over. It's over. You can go home. Go on. We'll see you next time. We'll be here. Bye.